Hello, everyone, and welcome to Edge Talk Radio. My name is Angela Zabel, that's me, and today we're going to be talking about uncovering hidden truths of the medicine with author Audrey Gale from California. She's done the human trial and also the sausage maker's daughter. So she's got a few books out there and more to come, so be ready for that. So who am I? My name is Angela Zabel. I have been connected to spirit my entire life, working with the team in the non-physical. I've been sharing messages from a multitude of realms with people. I am a teacher, coach, medium, radio show host, writer, retreat host, gallery reader. I do speaking engagements, offering guidance, mediumship, and intuition with online private and group sessions, classes, and I also have the Amplified Universe monthly membership. This is a group learning about growing our connection to us, our world, and our role in it. And this is also, we are also about sharing our knowledge with others. And I've been working with people around the world. And you can find out more about me on pretty much all the social media aspects, but go to my website, angelazabel.com. And today we are here with Edge Magazine. Edge Magazine is the leading events and media resource dedicated to all aspects of holistic living, health, wellness, and the mysteries beyond. Promoting businesses and committed to doing to promoting businesses, organizations, and individuals who support our collective journey to wholeness and balance. They are currently distributed in over 30 states plus Canada, with over 17,000 magazines per printing. And they also have a vibrant online magazine with over 42,000 people reached per month. You can have a magazine shipped direct to your door. You can stay up to date by going hitting their newsletter or become a drop spot. And that you can find out more about them at edgemagazine.net. And they're also on pretty much all the social media aspects. And today we are here with Audrey Gale, and we're going to be talking about the human trial and much more. So think of how Nikola Tesla's brilliant research on energy and vibration was sabotaged and suppressed by forces that saw it as a threat. Think also about so many of the amazing alternative, effective healing methodologies of nu or nutritional supplements that have been banned from public use, discredited, and forced into limited accessibility by the government and medical establishment. Especially energy-based or vibrational healing, despite that being humanity's essential nature. That kind of suppression is at the heart of Audrey Gale's new medical thriller, The Human Trial, which evokes the essence of a Robin Hood tale. Robin Hood tale, an innovator, a pathologist who stands up for saving humanity, but faces the most grievous odds. Today, Audrey is here to explore with us how she came to write this remarkable book and the personal experience with vibrational frequency and the suppression of life-saving health solutions. You'll hear how her interviews with real-life researchers and doctors of medicines, as well as psychics, right?
Physicists.
Physicists. I'm like, am I reading that wrong? I think I was wrong. Physicists.
Physicist. Yeah.
Physicists informed of the story of the human trial, the suppression of cutting-edge healing strikes at the heart of this novel. Replicating real life now and throughout history, author Audrey Gale's personal experiences with the healthcare establishment inspired the powerful medical thriller. And you definitely want to check this out. So you can find this on Amazon. The Human Trial is on Amazon. She also has her social media is audreygaleauthor.com is her website. You can find her on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So make sure to check her out. Again, it's audreygaleauthor.com. And she makes sure to check out her books, The Human Trial, The Sausage Maker's Daughter, and more to come. So, Audrey, I want to thank you so much for being here today. And I want to know, how did you get into writing this book on the human trial?
Thank you, Angela. It's been quite an interesting, few moments that we've shared already. I bet you could probably answer that yourself. You've shown me how expansive your knowledge is, and it's been a joy. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I will say that writing this book was Maybe the biggest challenge of my life, but I haven't lived my whole life, so who knows? But so far, and because I'm a writer, I have a master's degree in writing, I have an undergraduate degree in business, so it's not like I came into the world understanding pathology and physics, and really it's more quantum physics that this book takes us into. But I do want to say that what I write has to do a couple things. For the books that I love, they have to have really compelling characters. They have to have a compelling story with building suspense. I love suspense. I love being grabbed by a story and not let go until the end. And so that came first. I love to write really solid, well thought out stories with really interesting, if not lovable, characters. And so that's where it really started. But the inspiration, which was your question, it took the universe a couple pretty good slaps before I really started paying attention to what I thought it was telling me to think about. It started in my mid-30s when I had a very bad lymphatic infection throughout my body. You could see my lymph glands. They were swollen and painful. I it hurt to put my arms down. They were down my shins. You could see them all over my body. And it was, and I was living in San Francisco at the time. So I went to my internist and he tried a few things. And then he sent me to the cancer specialist and the endocrinologist and the exotic disease, every specialist he could think of, and not one single thing that any of them did made any difference. So I was pretty much decided that I was dying of lymphoma. But I worked with a guy at the time who said to me, "You know, what have you got to lose, Audrey? Why don't you come with me to my acupuncturist? She's just fabulous." So I thought, well, oh, you know, what do I have to lose? So across the bay, we went to Oakland to Dr. O and Dr. O. It's a brother and sister team, Chinese doctors, and one is the acupuncturist and one was the or is the herbalist. And so I went to the acupuncturist first, and she stabbed one of my painful lymphs and said, "I don't care what you call this, you have infection all over your body." And so she gave me an acupuncture treatment, and maybe I went back a couple more times. I really can't quite remember. I'm sure I went back a couple more times. But then she sent me next door to her brother, the herbalist, and he concocted this really stinky, awful tasting powder. And he told me, "I want you to eat nothing but vegetable smoothies with as much garlic and onion as you can tolerate, and of course, this powder." But he said, "The good news is you can have it as many times a day as you want."
Wow. Oh, that sounds wonderful. That doesn't taste good. It smells probably not
Terrible.
the
And yet,
worst.
Angela, honestly, it was a miracle. I mean, by the next morning, my
Wow.
lips had really shrunk back into normal. Within a couple
Wow.
of days, I was completely recovered. And then I went back to my internist and I said, "Okay, take a look and tell me what you think." He said, "What have you done?" And I told him,
Wow.
acupuncture and herbs. And he said, "Wow." His opinion was that there's a place for both Eastern and Western medicine, that Eastern medicine is great when your body can still fight for itself, and Western medicine is good when your body can't fight for itself. Now, I think if you think of like emergency room things, like a car accident, then that probably holds true. But anyway, oh, can you hear my dog?
I like your dog. And
My dog wanted to chime in there. Well,
I
anyway,
think
so that was the first time I felt like, wow, what have I just experienced? What have I just seen? If acupuncture is this effective, cheap and quick, why isn't it more mainstream? So anyway, then I kind of forgot about it, went on with my life. And then I moved to Los Angeles and I had a 16-year-old golden retriever who became very ill, and it was something weirdly similar. Her skin was all swollen and it was a little oozy, and I didn't have a vet, so I went to multiple vets and they all told me the same thing. She's 16, excuse me, she was 13. She's 13 years old. She's had her life. She's a big dog. Just put her down. And I couldn't because I didn't have any friends in LA and she was it. So I selfishly kept looking and I found a holistic vet who was another enlightenment. He used sounds and vibrations and he used chiropractic, he used acupuncture, he used all these non-invasive methods. And of course, my dog came back. She recovered completely. She had 3 more years of life. She died basically of probably just old age and maybe arthritis at 16. And so, but then the final thing that I could not ignore any longer, after I'd seen these two amazing things and had these incredible experiences, it was when my dad, who my parents lived in Los Angeles at that time, my dad came to my house after being diagnosed with leukemia and going for his first chemotherapy treatment. He came to my house and he said quite bluntly, "I don't care, Audrey. I am not going to go through that again. I would rather die." And so I said to him, "Well, Dad, I know you haven't asked me what I think you should do. But if you ask me what I think you should do, I would take you to my vet."
I
And
bet
my
he'd love that
my dad, being my dad, said, "Well, what have I got to lose?" So off to the vet we went, and he made my dad a cassette of sounds. So sounds being a vibration. And he explained to us that he didn't he told me about the original scientist who I have since really studied, who had discovered this sort of vibratory frequency healing method in the 1920s and 30s. And he said, "I don't have the equipment that they have. I don't have a sophisticated lab like they had, but I can take those their hertz frequencies and I can step them down like octaves on a piano. And in physics, that's called harmonics. And I can create a related frequency in the auditory spectrum." And that's what he created for my dad. And my dad went home with his cassette tape and listened to it nonstop, started to feel better almost instantly. And then he too, month or two later, went back to his internists, his MDs, and they said, and here's what they said: the damnedest case of spontaneous remission they had ever seen. So, you know how we don't really talk about cure in modern medicine, but my dad did die, I think it was 4 years later, maybe five. He died of pneumonia and not leukemia. So I call that a cure. But at any rate, that was the final slap from the universe that said, "Audrey, pay attention. You've been given these experiences. It means something." And so I started out just asking the question, what have I seen? What have I just experienced? And why don't people know about it? Well, you mentioned the suppression of Tesla. You know, if you think about the term status quo, it says right there, they're not interested in change because it might affect their position, their wealth, their power, their status, you know, status quo. So that's what happened to the original scientist that I investigated. And I was able to learn there's quite an underground of people who are understanding that everything is energy. And the way I want to put that in scientific terms is to say, in 1900, actually 1905 for Einstein. The physicists discovered that there is no solid in the universe, that everything at its most fundamental basis is vibrating energy. That means the desk I'm sitting at, that means me, that means you. If we could look at the sub microscopic level, we would find vibrating energy. We wouldn't find a solid. And so that gap between the physicists of the early 1900s and medicine today is what this is about. This is why frequency healing can work. I have a whole big fat book behind me that gives you the hertz or megahertz of every disease you could imagine. Even just sleep deprivation, even just boosting your immune system from cancer and emphysema, what anything that has a microbe basis as a disease, they discovered the frequency. So let me step back just a bit. So the scientists I studied, based on what my vet had shown me and my father, had discovered through the use of a very powerful and unique microscope. They had discovered if you look at live disease specimen on those little glass slides,
Oh, yes.
which is actually on the cover of my book, if you could look at them alive, you would see these teeming life forms, little tiny microbes. And each disease had these microbes, and each disease microbe had its own unique frequency. So they started to track all of this. Now, the reason it's not done commonly today is because, number one, no one has ever been able to replicate those microscopes. They're called Rife microscopes.
Oh,
They were
interesting.
all confiscated and have been suppressed. We don't, they don't exist anymore as far as we know. But people are slowly but surely working their way back. And what happens in today's world in medicine is that they treat these samples, fluids, or tissues on these little slides, they treat them with chemicals to augment their visibility.
Oh,
But the
yes.
chemicals are killing the microbes they're trying to look at. And about this time, just as an aside, the electron microscope was being developed. However, the way an electron microscope works is that it bombards the specimen on these little glass slides. It bombards them with electrons. Now that's energy. And that means that the cells of the microbes are being hit with an energy that eventually changes their shape and their function and kills them. So that's why today, even in today's world, 125 years later, well, 100 years from the scientists and 125 years from the physicists like Einstein and Bohr, that's why it's not common for medicine to look at live specimen. They don't have the correct methodology. So that's where we are, and that's when I finally got very serious about what I had found. I studied these two scientists, I studied the science, and I decided that the best way I could contribute to making this knowledge better known and hopefully widespread, is to put it in the form of a story. So I created fictional characters inspired by the scientists, but I was very, very true as far as I could be in plain English, which was a big limitation,
Yes.
to the science. The science, I wanted to be true to the science because that's the important part of the book. I sense there's a big wave of dissatisfaction with the medical realm, especially in the United States, because it is so outrageously expensive, because cure is a word that is avoided, invasive side effects, serious side effects. that could cure something and start another something. And so there's a wave of dissatisfaction, and I hope this book was time to catch that wave.
Absolutely. And I think it's great to have this information. I just want to circle back a little bit. So you mentioned the two scientists you studied. Can you say their names again? So if anybody wants to kind of dig into them a little bit more and kind of do some more
Sure.
research on their own. So what were the two scientists you were studying?
So the main guy, the other one was an MD who was sort of involved in the human trial of this science. He died sort of suddenly and young. His name was Dr. Johnson. But the real scientist behind both the microscope and the discovery of these live disease microbes and their frequencies, and the fact that if you could replicate that frequency exactly and just expose the diseased body to it, it overwhelms the disease and the microbes die and nothing else is touched. His name was R Dr. Royal Raymond Rife, Rife. And looking
Interesting.
into him, he is the unsung hero of the millennia. He
Wow.
really understood the energetic basis of all of creation, all of creation.
Wow.
That includes us. And so he also did not have a very happy ending. So there's a lot of pushback. And especially, I set the story in the Depression because those were the real years, but also because the entire world was already suffering.
Yes.
Everybody was suffering. And there was no end in sight. Everybody was scared and destitute and desperate. And so that timing also may explain why the status quo was so rigidly against it.
Yeah.
But it may also just be the status quo,
It's a lot of status quo.
power, money. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's something, and again, that was say the doctor, what was his first name? Rife?
Royal Raymond Rife,
Oh.
Rife. Royal Raymond Rife.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. I'm writing that down myself.
Yeah, it's a very interesting it. The things that I've read about him is like he'd strap himself to the chair in his lab so that he could scroll through vibrations, minuscule amount of change by minuscule amount, and sometimes sit for 12 hours as he was zeroing in on frequencies. And anyway, he has a background. He has a background in optics, which is obvious with the microscope, and then he supposedly had some dealings with the government in terms of the Defense Department. And anyway, he was a very broadly thinking man who did not have a happy life.
And it seems like that's what happens a lot with the very talented and very intellectual. Seems like that they have the intellectual and the talent and really thinking way outside of the box, but in actual life and having really good relationships and really having a good life, that's a little sketchy with a lot of them. Seems like that's the
Yeah.
one thing that falls.
I think you're right, but I think part of that is just, they're standing so far ahead of the crowd that the people who are concerned about their status and their power and their wealth and they're such obvious targets. They become the obvious target. They're just too far ahead of the crowd, and they threaten the status quo.
Absolutely. And that's something, to know. There's a lot of things that have been out there, have maybe been squelched out along through time. There's a lot of that out there. And it's just realizing what is it? What can we do now? What can we do differently? And this is really working with that frequency And so those of you who don't know, I work with a team on the other side, and they're showing me how you have frequency vibration in water when even a fish jumping out of a water does ripples of vibration all the way through. And think of that in a different scale with that same sound or disturbances of sound going through your body, how that ripple can make an effect and make a difference. And I don't know if you've seen some of those where they take sand and maybe put them on a round, on a drum, or on a table, and then they put sound in there, vibration, and how it changes to all different patterns in different areas. And it's the power of sound is so huge and so vast, and people are starting to remember how to tap into it once again.
You
And
know, it is so interesting because I came after studying these scientists to think about a healthy body in terms of a symphony, where every single part of your body, the 40 trillion cells having a billion interconnections every single second, everybody knows their part. They know, like, the maestro is leading them. They know when to come in. They know when to back off. They know when to play together. They know when to play loud, when to play soft. I think a healthy body ends up being, in my simple visual, a perfectly attuned symphony.
I love that. I love that. And especially with sound and frequency, and everybody loves, you look at people when you get good music going on, and people are just swaying and dancing and moving to the music. And to think of your body doing the same thing, and think of the music that's going on in your body every day. But a lot of us don't pay attention to it and don't realize, like, oh, there's all this going on. What if I tune into that? How would I move? How would I sway? Just think of the fun you can have doing that.
Yes, and that is a very good practice for learning to listen to your body. I have a couple takeaways that I've come to give when I talk about my book, The Human Trial, and that is learn to listen. Learn to listen. Nobody knows what's going on in your body better than you do. And then ask 1,000 questions. Question authority. I love that statement from the 60s. Question authority. Go to every kind of specialist if you're having a health problem. Or any kind of problem. Go to as many different kinds of specialists as you can and ask every question and make sure you are completely satisfied with their answer. Don't let people talk over you or around you or down to you, even worse. And then you get to decide. You get to decide what's right for you.
Absolutely. And I think that's something we've been kind of taught, not to listen to our body, but to get information from other people. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to go to someone else. I'm going to go somewhere else. Instead of taking that time and just kind of sitting within yourself and going, what am I feeling? Where is it coming from? How does my body feel? How does it really feel? Not just pay attention to that first inkling of pain, usually. I mean, that's usually like the last thing really that comes up, that there's so many layers before that pain ever hits you. So go beyond the pain to see what else there is. And I just have to ask, when your vet, when you brought your dad to go see your vet, what was his response?
Well, you know, I my
Yeah.
vet, I tell you what, that was a magic time in my life. I had these two incredible men with great expansive intellect, just open. And you know, my dad and my vet just hit it off, and he explained the science in terms that I probably couldn't fully grasp at the time. And the vet was the only caution he had was that, of course, he would could be thrown in jail for this, right?
Right.
He doesn't have a license to practice medicine. Not with humans, that is. And so, of course, it had to be completely between us.
Right.
And until my vet, who was quite an elderly man when I met him, until he passed away some years later, I couldn't talk about this. So that was another reason that there was a bit of delay in getting to this book. He would have been severely fined. His business may have been closed altogether, and he could have gone to jail. And it depends on how much of a threat you are, what combination of those three he would have gotten. And
Yeah. You know,
so
and that's something for people to realize. There's a lot of things coming out now that are coming out that have been undercover for so long because people have been trying different things. And especially like with your dad, there was really no hope unless he did something else, that the outcome was going to be you're going to die or you're going to die. You want to, what do you want to pick? You know, there's really no choice between it. So to try something else, why not? What's it going to hurt? But it is when you start getting into the legalities of it, and that's why there's so much of it that hasn't been out there that is starting to come out now, like you said, after they pass, because you certainly, especially after all he had done to help your dad, you certainly don't want to put anything in jeopardy with him.
No. I love that man. I don't know, I just love these sizzling intellects. You know, it's so inspirational to me to just sit and watch and listen.
Absolutely. And there's so much out there. And for people to really pay attention to the people around them and start a conversation. And so my team is saying you can start a combination, a conversation by just throwing something out as bait to see if people will bite on it. And if they bite on it, great, reel them in and start talking. And if they don't bite and they spit it out, just walk away.
It's so true. So true.
And as you started doing this and you did the own your own information working with shoots, I can't think of the word. The pins.
Physicist, physicist,
No,
are
the
we
pins,
supposed
the needles.
to
The
that?
acupuncturist.
Okay.
I'm like, they're just, I got pins.
Yeah, pins, pins.
Pins, but the acupuncturist, when you're working with them. I think you were also at the point of what do I do? I don't have any options. And that's, I think, where a lot of people end up trying these other alternative aspects because you run out of options. Your options are I'm going to be miserably sick and going to get worse, or I'm going to die, or there's no hope at the end of the tunnel. So you're going to try some of these alternatives. But I feel that all those people that have tried those alternatives over time have got us to where we are now. And you releasing this thriller now, this is the human trial now. I think it's time for it, where I think before it wouldn't have been time for people to hear it.
Thank you. I do sense that dissatisfaction. There's not a lot of people who, I mean, you can cross the border into Canada and pay a small percentage for the exact same treatments and drugs and so forth that you would get here. So, you know, it doesn't take a genius to say something is wrong with this picture. Something is wrong with this picture. And then the history of suppression that you opened this show with, Angela, it is so relevant. It is so relevant. The people in power like to be in power. And you know,
Yes.
I probably would like it too, but I don't have to worry about that. And yet it's not just about you. It's not just about them. It's about the fact that we're all interconnected by this energy, which you
Yeah.
so poignantly described as ripples on the water, going through us all, going through us all. We're all in this together. And so, you know, we have to take care of each other as well as ourselves.
Absolutely. And it is something, it's something you brought up, a really good point. We are all in this together. And there's a lot of people, when you said before, marrying the Eastern medicine and the Western medicine. And I'm just hearing my tea saying the New Age medicine that people are starting to add in now. There's more advances coming in now. marrying all of those together, that's the key. And not to go look at it in anger of, like you said, people in power, but if you started getting the power, would you have gone further in the power, or would you have stopped yourself and done different things too? To not put judgment on people, and to know a lot of the doctors, they're not taught any of this. It's not through a fault of them. They're not taught this stuff.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I do have to remember to say, and I need and I want to say that the doctors who interface with us, who see patients, who see suffering, they are not making these decisions about what is quote unquote an appropriate treatment that they will be judged on and that they are licensed to give as treatments. It's a very disturbing fact that after World War II, our government spent a lot of money developing drugs after the first antibiotics and insulin had just come on the market and made a huge difference, especially during World War II. And so our government invested, and so these drug companies got a little bit of a push into the mega firms that they are today with enormous power and reach and wealth. So one disturbing fact that goes along with this thought is I read an article by a Harvard MD, Dr. John Abramson, who said there is only one subject or place in Washington where there is complete bipartisan agreement, and that is in accepting large contributions from drug companies. So our government is kind of in on it. It affects the way we're regulated. It affects the fact that we don't see these contributions, so we don't understand who's behind what. But it's worse than that. The medical schools in our country, and maybe everywhere, I can only speak for the US at this point, the medical schools accept large contributions from the chemical drug industries. And therefore, that is, without further investigation, that affects the curricula. So our doctors, who are well-meaning, I really believe it. I think my internist is one of the nicest, most responsible human beings.
Yes.
They are not allowed. This is not part of the curriculum. This is not what they are judged on when they're licensed or certified or recertified. They are judged on a strict curriculum of surgery, radiation, and drugs. That's the primary thing that they are educated on, and pretty much that's it. Remember, not too long ago, vitamins were controversial. It's like, whoa.
That's true. That is true. And that's, such a good point is a lot of these people's are they're going into medicine with a extremely good heart, and they want to make a difference. They want to do all that, but a lot of times their hands are tied, and what's being taught because of it is what it is at this point. But the more people are understanding more about what's happening, understanding more about their bodies, and knowing their bodies are this energetic body and it's something different than just the physical body, the more that's being integrated, you're going to see that change as we go forward. And not to have anger, why aren't they doing this? Why is this? It's to know it's there now. But it's changing because of all the people like you, people like that are listening to this, just them being open and listening and going, oh, there is more. And there are new ways of doing things. Just by that creates another vibration for change within that whole system. So
Exactly.
people have to realize the importance of just listening to this is creating a vibration, a ripple effect out there that is bringing that change in. So
Yeah.
I always, for me, it's always to encourage people to realize the importance of each and every person, the importance of you opening up your mind, opening up your heart, and looking at things differently and going out of the box. Just doing that is changing everything around us. Every single person is. Every person counts, every single one.
Yeah, and it is really the establishment. It's the establishment that makes up the rules, that enforces the rules. It's a very high level, a very probably a small, relatively small group of people that are just trying to hang on to the way things have been done. Because, change can be scary, and looking out there is looking into the unknown, and it can be exciting for some people, but it also can be threatening to some people. So
Oh, absolutely. Kind of think of, if somebody wanted to take your business away, you're going to be, you're going to fight for that. So when there's change out there, people are fighting to keep it the same way and know that as things change, as more people shift, as more people understand more on all sides, you're going to see that change. So it is coming, it is there, it is definitely making a difference already and will continue as we go forward. So there's a
Yeah.
lot more coming up, good stuff for this, for our lives, for the lives going forward, a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. I would add one thing, is that I also have personal experience, and I'm sure everybody does, with people you start to talk about these new ways and the self-responsibility that it might require. And you realize that people, and we have all been brought up this way, and there's certain comfort in knowing that you can go to an expert. You don't have to get too involved. You don't, someone is going to fix it for you. That there's some comfort in that thought. Someone knows more than I know, and they are going to fix it for me. And if it doesn't get fixed, it's not my fault. I'm a victim. And so there's an aspect of that. And that's to be avoided at all costs. That's to be avoided at all costs. That's just giving up your humanity.
And I'm glad you brought that up because we are moving out of victimhood. We were in victimhood for so many years, millennials, we've been in victimhood. We're moving out of it, and it's time to move beyond it, time to take responsibility for
Yeah.
all of you, for your actions, for what you do. And that means getting more knowledgeable, and it is easy. I mean, heck, you get done with work, you're done with this. I don't want to look at anything else. I don't want to investigate. I don't want to research. I just want to sit here. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you might want to start looking at some other things besides
Yeah.
balance it out. And
Yeah.
that's one thing I've just got my team telling is saying to everyone here, don't go in and say, I've got to study this, all my waking hours at night, whatever I need to do. They're saying this is all about balance. Balance it out. When something comes out, balance it out. Go look at it, go research, go investigate it, and then go, what makes sense for me? What doesn't make sense for me? But take responsibility for your actions. Every action, take responsibility because we are no longer victims, and that's why we're here. That's why we're in this, as some may say, this crazy world at this time, because it is a little bit different right now, a little
Just a
chaotic.
little bit, yes, indeed.
But that chaos brings change. And
Yes.
that's why we're here.
And I think that those events that I spoke about that turned me onto this subject and then turned me onto writing a book about this subject, and actually, it's going to be a trilogy. But those things that I thought were bad, as I look back, pushed me in a direction that I'm so pleased about. So, even the bad times are good. It takes some perspective for sure. And it's taken some years. But all those events that were very confounding to me pushed me in a place that I didn't really expect to be in, and I'm happy to be in.
I love that. And that's the biggest thing. Changing your perspective on the past, it brought you out of victimhood because there was, I've been there. I've been there myself, where you look back and it's like, oh, why'd that have to happen to me? Why did I have to go through all of this challenging times? Why did I have to do that? But then as you get to change your perspective, you start looking back and thank goodness that was an amazing time when I look at it. Look at what I learned. Look at what I brought out of it. Look at how much more I'm looking at the world so differently now, and how much stronger. They're just saying how much stronger you must feel confidence-wise and powerful personal freedom by moving through that.
Yeah, I'm still here.
You're still here, and you're succeeding, and you're growing, and you're thriving. And that's something that personal freedom brings with you looking at it differently, where you could have stayed in victimhood and said, all these things happened to me, not looked any further. And your book wouldn't be here for people.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It took three slaps, three profound slaps from the universe, and I finally said, okay, I am paying attention.
Oh man. So how did you start out? Because you didn't start out as a writer. You started out in other industries, correct? So how did you go from that into the writing? Was it always there, or was it something that you kind of morphed into over time?
You know, I think it was always there in some way because I can recall I have a whole bunch of sisters. I can recall telling my youngest sister that I was going to write books someday and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I had it all figured out. However, I have four sisters and no brothers. And we grew up in Wisconsin. And my dad was a businessman. And he went off to some place every day to conduct business. I didn't understand a whole lot at the beginning. And then he'd come home. And our sort of like dorm life with five women in the house came to an abrupt stop. And we suddenly couldn't have bobby pins or clips in our hair. We had to come down nicely, turned out for dinner, and sit at the table. And over ye the years of my really childhood, I started thinking, what does he do when he leaves this house that makes him so much more important than all of us? What does he do? What
Question.
is out there? So when I graduated from high school, I went to college and got a business degree because that was going to tell me the answer. Well, the answer is obvious, right? He who controls the purse strings pretty much controls everything. But
Yes.
I'm happy about that as well because I think my years, my 21 some years in corporate America really gave me, again, a sense of myself, what I could do in terms of how the world would value me, how I would succeed or fail, you know, who I drew into my life, who I couldn't draw into my life. All those lessons about the competitive environment of corporate America did teach me a whole bunch of things and gave me a level of confidence that I don't think I would have otherwise. And so it wasn't all bad, but then I just got tired of it. You know, it is a game, and if you're
Yeah.
going to be good at a game, you have to love the game. And I started to not love the game. In fact, I started to hate the game of everybody maneuvering and forming teams and doing shenanigans and jockeying for position and all that stuff that happens on a daily basis in the normal corporate world. So I had an opportunity to go back to school and I quit and I did go back for a writing degree. So it was
Nice.
always in there, but it got lost for several decades and then it came back.
But just think of the experience you gained on the business aspect as you started writing your book to bring the business aspect together with the book writing. So all definitely tied together in such a intricate way.
It's true. It's true. It's all part of me. But the funny thing is I wouldn't say that I necessarily read thrillers, but I've written my first book was a legal thriller, and my second book was a medical thriller.
Really?
And the next two parts of this trilogy will be the continuation of the medical thriller.
Interesting. So you started on, and this will be the medical thriller. So as you're, and people want, or I'm just hearing, so when people are reading this medical thriller of the human trial, you're going into, are you going into depth on some of the medical aspects and how things go together, some of these frequencies, different ways of medicine that have been brought together. Are you kind of bringing those into the book and telling them in a story way?
Absolutely, absolutely. That is exactly what I've attempted to do. I wanted to be absolutely true to the science. So there's enough out there that you can discover about Royal Raymond Rife, about frequency and energetic healing. If you come to accept and understand that everything in the world is vibrating energy, then you know your body is vibrating energy. And therefore, the disease state is a state of vibrating energy, and the health state is another state of vibrating energy. And what these scientists discovered when they discovered the living microbes and their signature frequencies was not, that was astonishing enough, but add to that, they found out that replicating those frequencies overwhelmed and eventually killed the diseased microbes, but touched nothing else. There's nothing invasive about this. The only downside they ever discovered, and there was a human trial and it was hugely successful, also inspiring my novel and the title. They discovered that, oh, I just lost my train of thought. This is where my brain is these days. They discovered that by replicating the exact frequency of each individual disease's microbes, that they could kill off the disease and leave the body healthy. The only downside, that's where I got lost. The only downside was if they had too much of a kill off at once, that it sort of was upsetting. It was, it made you feel sick as your body was passing out the dead microbes. So they learned to just limit the exposure to the frequency so that the body could more easily handle the pass out of the dead microbes. And that was that.
I love that my team is showing me, like, so I'm just gonna say we had a dam break around here, an actual physical dam that broke not far from here, and how there was all the fish left over, all the stuff left over that were all decaying and all that decay. And they said, think of your the microbes, if so many die at once, they're all decaying at one time, which was causing the illness and the sickness. So that's why it had to be done in certain levels. So they're just saying to kind of think of it that way. That's why you don't want to kill off too many at the same time, because they kind of decay. And that's just what they're telling me right now. So I'm just going to
No,
want
it's
to share that.
exactly right. It's exactly right. So your body will handle it. It's just that it will be more shocking and uncomfortable if it has to handle so much at once. Your natural processes will eliminate these dead microbes. So there was nothing else that needed to be done.
And it's just more when things pass, regardless of what it is, they creates a gas, and that gas is what brings that uncomfortableness within the body. It's a
Boy, boy.
buildup of gas, and they'll all be expelled. It's just, if you want too much gas or not.
That can be uncomfortable for everybody.
Absolutely. I think it's an amazing way for people to learn about a lot of these different the medical areas, the vibration, frequency, to do it in a way that's fun, that's exciting, to do a medical thriller where it's put in there and you're picking up and learning about without it being that dry. I'm going to go through all those reports. I'm going to do, and I'm just hearing my team laughing. They're going, "Well, Audrey already did that for you. So now you get to save the fun part."
I had two really great advisors. So my two main scientific characters our Dr. Randall Archer is the MD pathologist, and Dr. Adam Wakefield is the as the doctor of physics. And so I am losing my mind a little bit again. But anyway, so I had these two advisors. One was a physicist, one was a pathologist. They were friends of mine. And I said the same thing to both of them. I know you know a lot, but nobody understands what you're talking about. So my job is to try to learn what you know to the degree that I can and put it in plain English. That's my job. And I was determined to do that because I'm not writing a scientific treatise. I'm not writing for, quantum physicists. I'm writing for the population who, through our sheer numbers, can change things.
Yes. And
So,
that's the big difference, is putting it in plain English for anyone to understand. Because I'm sure if you get a whole bunch of physicists together and they're all talking, they have a great time and they know exactly what they're saying. But if we walked in the room, we'd be going, yeah.
exactly what you said. Yeah. And they were so good-natured about it. I mean, I remember saying to the physicist, okay, now this may seem a little bit off the subject, but I am going to put in plain English the Big Bang. And he sat there with a straight face. He listened to me. And then he kind of gulped several times. He finally said, okay. Yeah, yes. Okay, that's adequately said. Love this guy.
Kind about
He was so kind. They both were so generous with me.
it.
They were generous.
But what a gift to have those people that you could tap into to get that whole scientific aspect, the quantum physics, to go into the medical thing, to get all of that and to talk to people and get more of that information and make it into the regular person talking about it. And then to make it into a medical thriller where you're just following the story along and listening to it, having fun, being excited yourself, because all of us know a good book, and I love a good book.
Me
To
too.
have
Me
that good
too.
book where it keeps your attention from start to finish. What a fun way. And then afterwards, like, oh, this was in there, this was in there. And you're getting all that information without listening to all the technical jargon all the way through.
Right. You're getting it in a way that most of us could take in.
And most of you
Most of
can
us, yeah.
convey. And you
Yeah.
can convey it to other people, because
Yeah.
most people can't convey it from a paper, a scientific paper. Excuse me. But to
No.
convey that information to anyone else, like, oh, I read this book and it had this and this and this, and that's huge. That's absolutely huge.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Thank you. Are you okay, Angela?
Yeah, I just started like,
We've had too many laughs and too many tears.
We did. We had a good conversation before we ever got on here. So,
Did indeed. We did indeed.
and it's realizing, everything is connected. We are all connected. Everything is connected. The connection that Audrey and I made today was definitely a connection that was needed today, specifically.
And
And
profound, and profound.
absolutely. And
Wow.
it's knowing those connections are made throughout the universe. When they talk about quantum physics and everything is connected and everything connects, we are all connected. And there is no connection that is an accident. They are all orchestrated. And I loved how you did how the body is that symphony and bringing that through. It is orchestrated by us, the people we meet, and the universe at large, because they love to have fun out there.
And evidently they are.
Absolutely.
Love that.
Know I have to get you out of here real quick, but I wanted to know, there's one thing I was looking at. You do hiking, you do in the Santa Monica Mountains. And does that put you in the creative process? Is that to help ground you? Does it get you get your creativity flowing, or what gets you into your creative side?
Well, I've always believed that exercising my body was the best way to maintain my health, which is pretty vigorous because it's forcing the blood and fluids through your system. And forcing your blood through your system is the best way of cleansing. So it goes through the liver and the spleen and all your organs, and it's losing its toxins, which we are all exposed to. So that was number one. It was just about health, but it does getting out into nature. Where I hike into the Santa Monica Mountains, I'm generally there alone, and I have an expansive view of the ocean. And on good days, I can see Catalina, I can see Malibu, I can see Long Beach. It does something to your creative juices. It just try to take in the gift that we've been given, the beauty of it all. And it definitely gets my creative juices going. And if I ever am stuck, which is not very often, but if I'm ever really stuck, I do two things. I either go out and hike or walk, or I write. And both things help me find my way back to where I need to be.
I love that. I love that. And that's really for people to realize when things are getting to them, when things are going on. And Audrey's had a lot going on lately, and having that connection and bringing that together is so important. Find balance, find calm, whatever it is for you, whether it's listening to that music that's just pumping, if it's going out and taking a walk, if it's writing, if it's swimming, it's whatever you like to do. Find that balance and keep that balance, and that balance in life and calm, that'll get you everywhere.
Yeah, and for a long time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to what your next trilogy, part of the trilogy. So you've got one part made, The Human Trial. Are you working on the other part, or is that still in the
Yeah,
gear?
I've been working very hard on it, actually. I thought it was more done than it's really done, but I'm thinking of this as a multi-generational family saga. So some of the characters from the first book will find maybe a walk-on, maybe a better time on stage in the next. It's going to go from the 1930s, which was a very interesting decade, and there's lots of historical backdrop because it was the Depression, it was that whole era of Social Security and New Deal and so on and so forth, a big change in our government. And then it ended in the outbreak of World War II. So it was a very pivotal decade. And I bring that into the story as well because it shapes us. I mean, what's going on in the world shapes us all. So then I'm taking the next generation and another generation, but still some of the old folks from the first book, into the 1970s. And I like the 70s because Nixon was leaving the White House unceremoniously. The Vietnam War was dragging to an end. There's all this radicalism and protest, and all of that was still in play, coming to an end. So there was a lot of big changes again. I liked the 70s, and it also gave me an opportunity to write about people of an age that I wanted to write about. And then I was sitting, like we all were during COVID, in my home, thinking about viral infections, and I realized, wait a minute, why don't I bring this whole saga into the modern era? So
Interesting.
that is the plan. It'll end
Interesting.
the COVID era.
And that sounds so interesting. There's so much, there's so much that's been undercover all those years that is now coming to the surface. And to have someone like you who's doing that research and is bringing it out in a way that's exciting to read, that's a true gift. So I thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful interview.
I am having so much fun. And I just want to thank you. Is there anything you'd like to say before we close today, Audrey?
Well, let's see. Can people see my book cover if I hold it up?
Absolutely. Hold it up.
Okay, let's hold it up. Here we go. So, the human trial. Am I on?
You are on.
Okay, so you do see this is a specimen slide. And
Yes.
the bottom of it is Harvard, which is where the two scientists
Oh.
meet.
They both met there?
So Randall Archer comes from the wrong side of the tracks, but he gets a full scholarship all the way through his pathology degree at Harvard. He has a
Interesting.
little bit of a connection, and it just works beautifully for him. And he meets Adam Wakefield, who is exactly the opposite. He's from an old Boston family, very privileged, but a wonderful guy. And they team up over the science. But at any rate, I think if you just notice the way you spell my name, it's Audrey, and Gale is Gale, like the big wind. And so Audrey Gale author is where my website is, and I am on a lot of social media, including YouTube. And so you can find me in all of those places. And I'm hoping that the next edition of the trilogy will be out. I'm hoping within 6 months, but that might be a little, definitely by
That's
next year
ambitious.
sometime. It's ambitious. I'm definitely by next year.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I just want to encourage everybody, you can go to her website, audreygaleauthor.com, and also Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Go on Amazon and you can follow authors on there. And then I believe you get notified when they put a new book out. I'm not 100% sure on that. Maybe you know more about that than I do.
I don't know about Amazon doing that, but basically you can get this book anywhere you buy books. Your book local bookstore may not be carrying it, but they can order it for you. So anywhere you buy books, and it's also available in ebook form, and it's also available in audiobook form.
I was going to say, is it an audio also? Very cool. Very
Yes.
cool. Well,
Yes.
I definitely encourage everyone to go ahead and check that out. And if you're looking about where to find it, it's like go on our social media, YouTube, and then audreygaleauthor.com. So make sure to go there. And Audrey, I just want to thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you so much.
Angela, you are not done with me. I'm hanging on to this connection. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. Looking
Thank
forward to growing this connection for sure.
you. Okay, great.
Well, thank you so much. And I just want to encourage everybody. And she's also has the sausage maker's daughter, so you can go ahead and check that out also. And then I just want to thank you so much, Audrey, for your time, sharing your knowledge, being here with everyone. And I also want to encourage everyone, make sure to watch the next episode of Edge Talk Radio. They are on the first and third Tuesdays of the month at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. And no worries if you've missed any past episodes, you can listen to the downloadable podcasts or watch the interview on my YouTube channel, Angela Zabel, Teacher Coach Medium. And I just want to thank all of you here. Thank you for listening, expanding, and amplifying our universe together. Thank you so much and have an absolutely amazing day.